Good afternoon. You're listening to KTOO 104.3 FM. My name is Amanda Compton. I will be your host for all 5 Wednesdays in February for Juno Afternoon. With me, soon to be with me in the studio, we will find out about AARP's free tax preparation services with guest Sharon Lowe. Katie Chapman from NAMI Juno will tell us about their upcoming family-to-family classes. We'll learn about this week's olive oil tastings with guest Jennifer New. And we'll talk to Jeffra Clow this week at Eaglecrest. So that Writer's Almanac, music, and more coming up. And now look at today's weather. Strong wind from this afternoon through Thursday morning. The rest of today, mostly cloudy, becoming windy. Scattered rain, showers, highs around 39. Tonight, windy rain, snow level around 900 feet.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. 2 Oklahoma-based tribal governments have filed another amendment in their ongoing federal lawsuit to claim their historic water rights. KGOU's Kurt Courtney has more.
Attorneys for the Chickasaw and Choctaw Nations filed additional legal papers in U.S. District Court in Oklahoma City, saying Oklahoma's plan to resolve the water dispute in state courts will not settle the matter. The tribes sued in August to stop the Oklahoma Water Resources Board from selling its water storage rights to Sardis Lake in southeastern Oklahoma to the Oklahoma City Water Utility Trust without first reaching an agreement with the tribes. The tribe's attorney, Mike Burridge, says the tribe's amended complaint does not concede the board's authority to issue permits, but also does not challenge any current use of water under existing permits. Burridge says the tribes do not want to disrupt any existing permitted uses of water. The city of Oklahoma City also filed its response to the tribe's lawsuit, saying it wants to protect communities who depend on southeast Oklahoma resources for drinking water. Similar lawsuits in other parts of the nation have taken decades to resolve. For National Native News, I'm Kurt Courtney in Oklahoma City.
A federal hearing is held to examine the exposure of violence among children in rural and tribal communities. Members of the National Task Force on Children Exposed to Violence addressed the issue Tuesday in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Experts say rural and tribal communities face unusual challenges like lack of resources or access to services, which complicate efforts to reduce the impact of violence on children. Tribal advocates are encouraging federal officials to include policies and practices that support Native languages and culturally relevant programs. They point to language and culture as a foundation and identity for youth. The task force will identify practices, programming, and strategies to prevent and respond to children's exposure to violence. It will also issue a final report to the Attorney General at the end of the year with recommendations. With fewer than 150 known fluent speakers, the Aleutic language is just one of many indigenous languages worldwide that are in danger of extinction. However, efforts from people like April Counselor are working to make sure that won't happen. From Kodiak, Alaska, Jennifer Canfield reports.
Counselor is the language manager at the Aleutic Museum and the activity director for a new Aleutic Studies program at the Kodiak College. The museum was awarded a $40,000 grant to complete a book on the orthography of the Kodiak subdialect of the Aleutic language, for which only 45 known fluent speakers remain. Counselor says the project comes at a key stage after many years of creating language materials and developing speakers.
We now have this group of intermediate fluent speakers that needs this. This isn't something that we would have needed 5 years ago because we didn't have anyone that would have used it. But now we're getting to the point where we do have those intermediate speakers that are not fully fluent, but they're getting there. And I think that's why this is so important.
Counselor says the idea for the book came while working on a similar book for the Chugach dialect of the language, which is spoken in Prince William Sound and on the Kenai Peninsula.
We thought, well, it would be such an easy jump once that manuscript is created to create the Kodiak version.
Counselor says Dr. Jeff Lear, an early researcher of the language, was integral to establishing Aleutic as a written language in the late 70s. Lear, who is now in retirement, will be a major contributor to the book, which seeks to standardize the Aleutic writing system. The book will also be used in the newly established Aleutic Studies program at the Kodiak College. For National Native News, I'm Jennifer Canfield.
During this month in 1885, the Lumbee were recognized as an Indian tribe by North Carolina. The tribe has been working to gain full federal recognition for more than a century. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation.
National Native News is made possible with support from Days In of Anchorage. Wake up with the sun on the web at daysinalaska.com. Every Alaskan can support causes and organizations they care about when they file for a permanent fund dividend. Use PIC, CLIC, GIVE when filing online for your PFD. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
I have Sharon Lowe in the studio with me. We're here to talk about, she's of AARP. We're here to talk about the free tax preparation. Sharon, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing just great. I unfortunately don't qualify for free tax preparation at this point, but...
Are you sure?
No. Isn't it people who are potentially, what are the qualifications I could ask?
We do free tax service for as a community service under AARP's foundation, which is their nonprofit arm. We do it in conjunction with the IRS, and we also have worked closely with the CPAs in this town, or in this nation, in order to do this. AARP has been doing this for over 40 years, and so we have a good relationship and we know what we can do. We do it for anybody. Our target group are the elderly and the low income, and we do a good job of hitting them by getting about 65% of our returns that we prepare, they fall within that group. We do not discriminate. That's one of our things. We cannot discriminate based on age, race, creed, or anything else. We have to sign a standard of conduct saying that we will treat everybody fairly and without discrimination. So you might qualify for this.
Excellent.
We do, most of our returns are very simple. People are coming in. There is no monetary level on it. So, but what we have is a limit on what we can do, and we can't do complex returns if you need to go to a professional preparer, because we are not accountants. We are volunteers, and this is strictly a free service. We do not receive any donations or anything from it individually.
So when you say complicated, what do you mean? Like, should someone have a particular kind of...
If you have a trust account that you receive, if it's a simple trust where you get interest on it, we can do it. If you have a simple business that the gross income for the year is under $10,000 and the expenses for it is less than $5,000, you are on a cash basis only, you have no inventory, you have no depreciable assets. We can do small businesses like that. If you are a big trader in the stocks and things, you're out of scope for us. So, but if you have simple capital gains where you hold on to it and you've sold some capital, some stock during the year, we can do simple stock trades where you, and that type of thing.
What do you suggest people prepare before they come to you?
When they come to us, they need to have a picture ID. They need to have their Social Security card. They need to have all their tax records. They need to have them put together by year. I had one person show up one time that had 3 years mixed together. We need to have those all separated out.
So note just 2011.
Yeah. Well, we can, two of us can prepare prior year. If you get a notice from the IRS and they say they want the last three tax years, there's two of us, two volunteers that can go back. We have to be certified each year by the IRS to do the tax preparation. And if you aren't certified for a prior year, you can't do it. And I've got three new people on board this year that they can only do 2011, but there's two of us that can go back for the last 3 years.
So let's get it out there. Where and when is this happening?
We do taxes on Thursday evening in the Greening Park Rec Center from 4:30 to 7.
That's this Thursday, tomorrow.
Tomorrow's first day, and we will do those up until April 12th in Greening Park. We do them on Saturday afternoons at the Mendenhall Library, starting this Saturday through April 14th. And those will be from 12:30 to 4. And then if you want to do them downtown here, we will do by appointments only. And that means you have to call me at 789-1821 to set up an appointment.
That's 789-1821 to call Sharon to set up an appointment if you're downtown.
For downtown at the Mountain View Senior Center on Friday mornings from 8 to 11. And if you are housebound, you can also call me at that number, and two of us will show up on your doorstep doing a house call for you and prepare your taxes there. Unless there is something that requires it, such as you're filing separately from your married filing separately and you don't have your spouse's Social Security number, we file most of our returns electronically, and they're usually filed within 24 hours from the time that you finish with us and sign off on them.
Excellent. That sounds like a great service. So if you're homebound, you can call and you can actually get people to come over to your house to help you out.
Right.
And you don't necessarily have to be a member of AARP to have that.
No.
And you're doing it Thursdays, Saturdays, and by appointment.
Fridays.
Is there anything else that you'd like to add to tell people, any other information?
No, just come on down and have your taxes done. We do it because it's a great opportunity to meet our neighbors here in town, and the people who do it really enjoy helping people out. And as I said, it's a completely free service.
And will there be any cookies or juice?
When the Girl Scout cookies arrive, I usually bring a box or two down.
Okay. Well, thanks so much for coming on, Sharon.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday. It's the 1st of February, 2012. It's the birthday of S.J. Perlman, Sidney Joseph Perlman, born Brooklyn, 1904. His father, a Russian immigrant, tried to make his living as a poultry farmer. Perlman later said, "My father believed that if you had a few acres and a chicken farm, there was no limit to your possible wealth. I grew up with and have since retained the keenest hatred of chickens." He became a cartoonist when he was in college, then switched to writing essays, humorous essays, for the New Yorker magazine. The first collection came out in 1929, Dawn Ginsberg's Revenge. Groucho Marx wrote him a letter saying, "From the moment I picked up your book until I put it down, I was convulsed with laughter. Someday I intend to read it." It was Groucho Marx who persuaded Perlman to go to Hollywood and write screenplays. He worked on the Marx Brothers movie Monkey Business, 1931, and Horse Feathers the following year, and then went back to writing essays for The New Yorker, many of them published in collections The Ill-Tempered Clavichord, Chicken Inspector No. 23, and others. S.J. Perlman, one of whose essays begins, "I guess I'm just an old mad scientist at bottom. Give me an underground laboratory, half a dozen atom smashers, and a beautiful girl in a diaphanous veil waiting to be turned into a chimpanzee, and I care not who writes the nation's laws." It's the birthday of the poet Galway Connell, born in Providence, Rhode Island, 1927, went to Princeton, where his roommate was the poet W.S. Merwin, who woke Connell up one night and read Yeats to him. He's the author of many books, including Body Rags and Strong Is Your Hold. It's the birthday of the novelist Muriel Spark, born in Edinburgh, 1918, Growing up, she liked to write love letters to herself that she signed with men's names and hid in the sofa cushions in the hope of shocking her mother. Muriel Spark, best known for her 1961 novel The Prime of Miss Jean Brodie. And it's the birthday of the poet Langston Hughes, born in Joplin, Missouri, 1902. Went to Columbia University for a year, then decided he wanted to learn from traveling around the world. He went to France, Holland, Italy, Africa, and then to Harlem, where he was involved in the literary movement known as the Harlem Renaissance. One of the first African-American poets, Langston Hughes, to embrace the language of lower-class black Americans. Here's a poem for today by Jane Kenyon, Bright Sun After Heavy Snow. A ledge of ice slides from the eaves, piercing the crusted drift. Astonishing how even a little violence eases the mind. In this extreme state of light, everything seems flawed, the streaked pane, the forced bulbs on the sill that refuse to bloom. A wad of dust rolls like a desert weed over the drafty floor. Again, I recall a neighbor's small affront. It rises in my mind like the huge banks of snow along the road. The plow passing up and down all day pushes them higher and higher. The shadow of smoke rising from the chimney moves abruptly over the yard. The clothesline rises in the wind. One wooden pin is left, solitary as a finger. It, too, rises and falls. A poem by Jane Kenyon, Bright Sun After Heavy Snow, from The Boat of Quiet Hours, published by Grey Wolf Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, celebrating 100 years of discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. Edited by Noah Smith. Be well, do good work, keep in touch.
I have Katie Chapman in the studio with me today. She is from NAMI, and she's here to talk both about what NAMI is and also a particular class they're offering called Family to Family. Katie, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Could you give us a little background about NAMI and then maybe go into talking about this course in particular?
Sure. NAMI is the National Alliance on Mental Illness, and it's a national organization. There's NAMIs in every state, and then within those states, there's local affiliates. So Alaska has a NAMI in Juneau, Fairbanks, and Anchorage. Our mission is to provide support, education, and advocacy to those whose lives are impacted by mental illness.
And what position do you have in that organization?
I am the director.
The director.
Yes.
Well, congratulations. This is a relatively recent position for you.
It is. I started in July.
And how's it going so far?
It's going great. We're staying very busy, and we're excited about our Family to Family class that is starting on February 6th. And what Family to Family is an education program. It's been going on for about 20 years now, and it's been offered in Juneau for probably about the last, 6 years. And it's a free course, 12 weeks long. And what it does is it teaches family members and caregivers just some general information about mental illness. So let me go back. The program is for family members and caregivers of people with mental illness. So what it does is it just gives them some general information about mental illness, medications, treatments. It goes over how to be an advocate for your loved one so that they can get better treatment or the treatment that they need. And it also, most importantly, emphasizes on self-care for the individuals. We know that, especially today with the lack of insurance or underinsured. A lot of our family members are taking care of their loved ones who are sick or, you know, who have a mental illness. So it's really important that they get the kind of support and education and skills that they need to take care of themselves.
Which is the purpose of the class.
Right.
And so what about pricing?
This is free.
Free!
Which is awesome. And what's really cool, too, is that the participants walk away at the end of the 12-week course with a binder that is like 3 inches thick, full of material, just resources from everything that they learned in the course. And so this class is held every Monday night starting February 6th.
Which is the next Monday.
Yes. And it's from 5:30 to 7:30. And it's held at the family, Juno Family Health and Birth Center. And that's up over by Bartlett Hospital. And if you want to register, give us a call at NAMI at 463-4251.
Do you want to repeat that phone number one more time?
Sure. The number is 463-4251.
And you have limited registration?
No limited registration at this time. We have quite a few spaces open, so please register as soon as possible.
So will each Monday be a different topic?
Yes. Every week is a different topic. I think the first week starts off with just going over, I think, just some, like a couple different types of diagnoses. Families, the feedback that I get from families in the community who've taken this is that it's changed their life. And not only do they get a lot of information, but they get to meet other people who are kind of in the same boat. You know, there's such a stigma attached to mental illness that oftentimes family members aren't comfortable coming out and talking with their friends or anybody about the fact that, you know, their son or daughter may have a mental illness. So to come into a room where there's other parents there who are experiencing the same sort of thing, it's just, I think it's really empowering and it really helps people to know that they're not alone.
Great. Is there anything else you wanted to add?
Sure. The NAMI also works with the Juno Suicide Prevention Task Force. And so every first Tuesday of every month, which we have one coming up here, February 7th, we provide a Understanding Suicide Building Intervention Skills class. And it's held at United Way from 5:15 to 7:30. It's a film. It shows Dr. Bauer, who is a psychologist from a college in Washington. Anyway, he came up here on a cruise boat a few years back, and he did a presentation for the public about the signs and symptoms of suicide and how to intervene with somebody, like what kinds of questions to ask them if they may be thinking about suicide and then how to proceed from there
on. So this is a movie that...
Yeah.
About, he's talking in the movie.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so we show the film, but then there's also like there's a facilitator there, and we pause the film, and there's some activities that the audience, the participants do with the facilitator. So
who do you foresee as a target audience?
Everybody.
Everybody.
Everybody needs to come to this.
When is it?
It's
Tuesday?
The first Tuesday of every month, and it's at United Way, which is located at 3225 Hospital Drive. And it starts at 5:15, and it's free. And if you're a professional looking for continuing education units, CEUs, we offer one CEU for this. And you can just give us a call at 463-4251 to also register for this.
Great. Anything else, Katie?
Just that we have a couple support groups, too, for the community. We've got a bipolar depression peer support group. In partnership with SAIL, we're bringing this to the community. They're held every Wednesday except the fourth Wednesday of each month from 5:30 to 7, held on the third floor at the SAIL building, which is also located over there on Hospital Drive. And this is for anybody who has bipolar or depression. And one other group is a mental illness support group for family members and caregivers, which are held every Thursday from 6 to 7 at the Juno Family Health and Birth Center.
So the first support group is for sufferers.
For people with bipolar or depression, yes.
And the second group is for loved ones of those.
Yep, for family members or caretakers or even friends, you know, if you just want to come and get some support and learn, share some coping strategies and... Yeah.
Well, you do selfless work, Ms. Chapman.
Thanks
so much for coming in.
Thank you.
I have Jennifer New in the studio today. She is talking about the slow food movement. There's also an olive oil tasting that's occurring. Welcome to the show, Jennifer.
Thank you, Amanda.
Could you just introduce yourself and tell me a little bit about how you're involved with the slow food movement locally?
Sure. My name is Jennifer, and we have a local chapter called Slow Food Southeast Alaska. It's a local chapter of a national organization, which is part of a greater international movement towards appreciating good, clean food, food that's good for the earth, good for your health, and good for those who produce it for you.
And what sort of programs are you guys putting on, or how can other people get involved with this?
So this week, our chapter here has quarterly potlucks where we just get together and we learn or have presentations about different food topics. Maybe we've had bakers come in and talk about baking sourdough, and we've had people come talk about local mushrooms and making jams and jellies. And this week, we will be having an olive oil presentation. We've got some olive oil from Italy that we're going to be tasting, and we'll have a special presentation by olive oil farmer and producer Lorenzo Caponetti, who will actually be joining us via Skype. He was going to be coming in person this week, but due to some visa issues, he won't be joining us in person, but he will be joining us via Skype. So come out.
So all the events that are scheduled and on the calendars around town are still happening.
Still happening, and they will both be free. There's a presentation tomorrow, Thursday, at Pavitt's at 6:30 p.m. and potluck, so everyone can bring a dish and cutlery and plates, and we'll have a good time. And there will be a presentation on Friday at 6:00 at the Hangar Ballroom. So after checking out the First Friday events, definitely come out and join us there for an olive oil tasting and presentation. Yeah.
Can you go more into depth on the slow food movement? Like, what is the point of it, and why would someone want to get involved, and what are the initiatives?
Sure. So slow food, if we want to think about the opposite of fast food, so slow food is all about slowing down, enjoying food, and really getting to know where our food comes from. And in Southeast Alaska, we are so lucky to have a lot of great local food initiatives and a lot of local sources of food, such as salmon, berries. And so some of the projects that we have been involved with in the past include working in community gardens, getting those started up, and organizing volunteers around different projects, anything that people are really interested to support local foods in town. And there's a lot of talk about school lunches, and so anybody who's interested in stepping up and taking on those projects is very welcome to.
Thanks. I did want to point out that there was an admission that was going to be charged for, like, the Hangar Ballroom activity, but mm-hmm. you are going to waive that because
yep.
he's not going to be there in person, but mm-hmm. you're still encouraging everyone to come. It's going to be fun still.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
He's going to be there on Skype.
Yep.
So olive oil has gained a lot of momentum recently, mm-hmm. Like the last couple of years. It's kind of become sexier. How do you see its presence changing in our food society right now?
Well, the purpose of this week's presentations was just to get a perspective on olive oil from a producer, what it takes to grow olives, how to harvest, how it's pressed, and what to look for on the label, what kinds of things to look for, and also the health properties. There are certain special properties that olive oil has that research has finding out now, and it would just be fascinating to learn more about that.
What are some of the things you should look for on the labels?
Well, that is something that our presenter will present on.
So we'll have to come to the show?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Please do.
Is there anything else you wanted to add? I know maybe how to get in touch with the slow food movement, should someone want to get involved.
Sure. Yeah, we are. We have a Facebook page. Look for us on Slow Food Southeast Alaska. We also have an email list. We send out emails every once in a while local food opportunities and different meetings that we're having, and that is slowfood.seak@gmail.com. And we will also be sending updates on an upcoming board meeting just to discuss some more exciting projects that we're going to be doing this year.
It sounds really fun. How many people are involved right now?
We've got about 150 people on our email list.
Wow.
We have a good amount of people to kind of show up to our different events here and there.
So. Well, good luck with everything.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you'd like to add?
That's it. I just hope everybody will come out and have a good time this week.
Well, thanks for coming in, Jennifer.
Thanks, Amanda.
I've got one announcement for you guys today. The CBJ Street Maintenance Division regularly conducts snow removal on Juneau streets.
Streets will be posted with yellow no parking signs. That means no parking. Please remove your vehicles from these streets and avoid driving down these streets while snow removal operations are underway. It is very dangerous for vehicles trying to pass snow removal equipment. Any vehicles left in the street will be ticketed and towed to the Yacht Club parking lot. Please visit juno.org/streets for the streets that will be affected by snow removal starting January 31st. That was yesterday at 7 p.m. through February 3rd. So that's juno.org/streets. My mom actually just came to the studio. Apparently it's Take Your Mom to Work Day. And then we'll be talking with Jeffra from Eagle Crest.
KTOO is sponsored by the Alaska Club, with 18 locations statewide, celebrating its 25th anniversary. The Alaska Club, the way fitness should be. TheAlaskaClub.com.
I have Jeffra Clow in the studio with me. Good afternoon, Jeffra.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me in here this afternoon.
I am super happy. I am an avid skier at Eagle Crest, and so I'm always happy to talk to someone who's familiar with the area. Could you tell me a little bit about your position and then any upcoming events and information that the public might be interested in knowing?
Sure. I am the Director of Sales and Marketing in Snow Sports School. And so I oversee the Snow Sports School, the rental shop, the buses, and also sales and marketing. And as you know, it's just been a great season that we've had so far at Eagle Crest. Lots of snow, and we're really having a great time up there.
And actual lines at the lift.
Actual lines at the lift.
Yeah.
Snow is falling, and we actually had to spend some time yesterday having the parking lot closed while the mountain was closed to try and move some of that snow out of the parking lot.
Because it's getting narrow.
Yes, the parking lot was getting pretty narrow. We really didn't have a handicap lot because it was so narrow. So they closed the lot yesterday and made some great progress, and so I think people will really notice a big difference up there tomorrow.
Do you know what number Eagle Crest is at in the ranking of North America snowfall right
now? You know,
now?
I haven't seen. Unfortunately, there you have to go to a variety of different sites to kind of fit us in to see where we are. But just based on my conversations with people from around the industry, we're right up there with snow. We've got around 152, 154 inches of packed base at the top of the mountain and about 102 inches of packed base at the Day Lodge. So
how does that compare to average?
A lot of snow. I've never seen this much snow at the bottom of the mountain. I've been here for 20 years. So there was one year, I think it was 2005, where we had 109 inches around the end of March. So we haven't even gotten into our big snow months, so it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Does this increased snowfall mean any difference for the type of people that are coming? Are you still seeing majority season pass holders? Or because we have so much snow, are we getting more visitors?
Well, we certainly have a great big season pass holder base, and we're seeing a lot of those folks. But what's great to see is we're seeing a lot of new people to Eagle Crest, new families that are taking up the sport, new adults. We've seen a lot of adults in snow sports school
great.
Taking either ski lessons or snowboard lessons, and I think that's a variety of reasons. Certainly the snow can account for a little bit of that. When we have snow at sea level, people know we have snow at the mountain. But this is a second year for our porcupine chair in the learning area, and that's a great place to learn, and people are really having a good time with it.
So there are the people who are learning, and then there are the people who have learned. And one big question that I have had and both been asked is, when is there going to be a little chair up Fish Creek Nam?
Well, I know a lot of people would like that, a little chair up Fish Creek Knob. And, you know, I think one of the things that's going on right now is there is a master plan process going on right now for what Eagle Crest is going to look like in the next 20 to 30 years. And I know people are looking at expanded boundaries, summertime operation, and McDowell Group just finished their portion of it, of their surveys, both the written survey, online survey, and their telephone survey. And they are going to make a presentation to the Eagle Crest board, and I believe that's happening on Thursday.
Okay, so that's the next step in the process
right
now.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds exciting. Is the master plan project mostly was the initiative because it is a city-owned and everyone has
sort of some sort of investment in it? Or do you think that would happen if it was a privately owned?
Oh, any ski area always has a master plan process. I think because Eagle Crest is owned by the city, it gets the public much more involved because it's community owned. And there's public meetings just to kind of get the ball rolling in the direction that the master plan should take. And then once the Eagle Crest board has approved what the McDowell group and the other consultants have presented to them, it'll be put out in front of the community for their input, too. So there still is ample time for community input on what you think Eagle Crest should look like in the coming years.
And this is kind of a big year, not only because of snowfall, but because there's a new GM, Matt
there's
Lillard.
There's a new GM.
And I know how he does as a skier, only because I've been on the lift and see him, like, shredding. And I was wondering, how is he doing as a rookie GM?
Well, he's got lots of snow and lots of business, so I think everything is going great.
Yeah, he always seems to be smiling.
Yes. So it's great to, you know, as a new GM, to have all this snow and all this business, so it's really good.
Is there anything else you wanted to add?
Well, we've got a couple of big events that I just thought I'd kind of throw out there. We'll be talking about them more in the coming weeks. But on Saturday, February 18th, is our Winter Fireworks Spectacular, where we get to together and celebrate all of our snow in the winter. With we'll have a band and fireworks, and we'll have more on that in the coming weeks. But that's Saturday, February 18th. We've also teamed up with the Alaska Brewery for the second annual High Gravity Games, which is on Sunday, March 11th.
What do those entail?
Oh, it's a great time. We do a relay race that includes an alpine leg, a Nordic leg, a snowshoe leg, and a human sled dog leg. We have a keg toss.
Can you back up?
I wondered if you would let me go, just fly by that.
No, no. You said an alpine leg. So alpine skiing,
snowboarding,
okay.
Yeah,
and
downhill.
What?
And then a Nordic leg. So the alpine or snowboarder passes off to a Nordic skier, and they do their leg.
Skate skiing, classic,
okay. However they want to get around. And then the Nordic skier passes off to a snowshoer, and the snowshoer has a very challenging course that they have to do. And then the snowshoer passes off to a human sled dog team.
That might be the part that I don't
get. You've got, it's two people, one person sitting on a sled, and the other person is pulling the sled. And this is in honor of the Iditarod. And it's a great course and was spectator fun last year. So we're looking forward to it again this year.
Sounds like there's some strategy involved.
Oh,
like,
definitely.
And does anyone try and do it all by themselves?
No, we encourage teams. We haven't had anyone try and do it all by themselves because I'm not sure how you could pull yourself while you're sitting on the sled.
Right. I guess you have to have someone for that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So maybe a strong person for the snowshoer division?
Yes, definitely need a strong person for the snowshoer. You need a strong person for the human sled dog as well.
So are there awards? Are you just given recognition?
There's awards, and this is the second year that we've teamed up with Alaska Brewery, and they got some great awards in mind.
Awesome.
Yep, so you'll be hearing more about that in the coming weeks, but people want to save that date. It's March 11th.
March 11th.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything else you wanted to add?
Just a final comment that the days are getting longer, so the lifts are going to start opening later.
Mm-hmm.
So the lower chair lifts starting tomorrow will be open until 4 o'clock.
Great.
And if you need any more information on Eagle Crest, you can always go to skijuno.com, or you can also find us on Facebook. Just look for the Eagle Crest logo.
Well, thanks for coming in, Jeffra.
Thanks for having me today, and have a good day.
Bye.
Thank you. Spirit of Youth celebrates teenage Alaskans who are making our communities better places to live. They give their time, their hearts and minds, their passion, their creativity, Now, hear their stories.
The Nome Youth Facility is a rehabilitation center for regional kids, and in some ways, it's one of a kind. Its teenage residents don't stay locked away. They go out into the community and give service. Their volunteer work includes manning the food bank, picking up litter, cleaning community buildings, helping out with special events, and assisting elders. They also learn critical cultural lessons at summertime fish and culture camps. Stephanie Johnson is a mental health clinician there.
One of the things that the kids have been doing this past summer and into the fall is cutting firewood. They're allowed to go out on the beach. They gather wood with the staff. They come back. They cut the wood. They stack the wood. And they actually deliver the wood to people who may request it. And the kids take such pride in this work that they're doing because they get a lot of positive feedback from the community.
That good feedback goes a long way in helping both the kids and the community heal. Here's one former Nome Youth Facility resident.
Knowing that you're doing something to help someone else, I kind of look at it as a chain because, you know, in the end you're going to get something out of it, whether it be a thank you or a pat on the back. You know yourself that you did something right. You know, I couldn't wait for the next community work service day to come so I can go help, because it was a lot of fun.
The Nome Youth Facility serves Nome, Kotzebue, and 28 surrounding villages. It has 14 beds and mostly provides short-term detention. I'm Shanna Sheehy.
Give a young person you know a boost by recognizing the good things they're doing. Nominate at spiritofyouth.org.
Provided by the Association of Alaska School Boards.
The time is 3:55. You've been listening to Juno Afternoon. My name is Amanda Compton, and I've been your host. I will continue to be your Wednesday host for the next 4 Wednesdays through February. And a look at the weather. We still have strong wind from this afternoon through Thursday morning. The rest of today, mostly cloudy, becoming windy. Scattered rain, showers, highs around 39 degrees. Southeast winds, 15 to 25 miles per hour with gusts up to 40 miles per hour in the afternoon. Tonight is windy with rain, snow level at 900 feet, lows around 35 degrees. And Thursday, rain, snow level at 1,200 feet in the morning, highs around 40 degrees, southeast winds 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow on Juno Afternoon, we'll talk to Scott Griffiths of the Glacier Swim Club. We'll hear from Dorinda Skanes and Richard Karstensen about the City Museum's solo artist show and coffee and collections. Lou Logan, Pat Race, Aaron Suring will be in to talk about the Jump Society's Winter Showcase. And Nancy DeTourney will give us the rundown on art happenings in the capital city during Arts Up. That, Writer's Almanac, music and more tomorrow at 3 p.m. KTO FM Translator ID, this is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts on these translators. In the Valley and Ok Bay area, tune to K276 AF 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AM 88.1. K220 BT serves Huna at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, hear KTOO on K210 AS 89.9. In Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Juneau on digital channel 871. KRNN can be heard on digital channel 872, and KXLL can be found at 873. We're also online at www.ktoo.org. Stay tuned for All Things Considered coming up at 4 o'clock.